is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six after on a Thursday. Glad to be back in the chair, back on the microphone. Glad to have you listening. Appreciate your support. The hotline number is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. We begin with Matt checking in from Okemos today. Matt, what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to make America great again, one liberal mind at a time. It's a tough road to hoe, but I think we can do it.
And how are we going to do it?
We're going to convince them with results. We're going to get results. That's what Trump's going to get.
But don't you? Facts
more jobs,
don't matter.
More infrastructure, more things getting done, a better immigration program. Not people running around killing people, not demonizing the police.
All right, fair enough. With results, we'll see if results work. Matt, thanks for checking in. Like I said, the hotline number is 888-900-9966. My next guest is Dave Ageba, former member of the Michigan House of Representatives. He shot me a note on Facebook after the last conversation about infrastructure and debt and so forth of Michigan, $75 to $150 billion in debt. A lot of states facing the same problem. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
So you say the problem, though, is the fact that the note you sent me is that Republicans are spending money at a pace faster than they did under the Granholm administration. They just don't seem to get it.
That's a true statement. If you watch how fast the budget has gone up, it's always gone up greater than it should have. People got the misconception that government spending is necessary. There's a lot of spending in government that shouldn't be there. If I were governor, if the next governor gets in, I would hope that he'd call every one of his department heads in, those that he can control, that is, that are not, that are discretionary spending, and tell them to cut at least 1% out of every budget. That's not much. Most people cut a lot more than that out of their budgets, and that at least would stop the growth of government. It's not that everything they spend is necessary. It's just that if you give them money, if you give them a buck, they're going to spend a buck and a quarter. Been there, done that, saw how budgets work. The governor comes down with a budget and says, here's what your target is. It's always bigger than it was the year before. Even when me and some other senators, I was a state rep, and the senator and I got in the room together, our budget was too big. We wanted to cut it smaller. We were $200 or $300 below what the governor wanted, and we were told through the pipeline, spend it or I'm going to give it to somebody else. We looked at each other and said, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, you know, no.
Are we Democrats?
We've all heard, well, maybe we haven't all heard. I've heard those stories for sure that, you know, you get down to the end of the year and departments are like, hey, we've got to get rid of this money because if we don't spend it this year, we won't get it for next year. So they just spend the money. They find some way to use the money because if they don't, their budget might get cut by a few pennies. And by God, we couldn't have that.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, I chair transportation, I deferred to the Department of Human Services, and I was on Department of Community Health. Those are all huge budgets. In the Department of Transportation, for example, the governor has at his disposal two King Airs, two twins, and a single airplane. Why does he need five airplanes? I wanted to try to cut some of those, and I got nothing but resistance.
All right,
There's
so what
a
is
lot of waste in government. I know you hear it all the time, but the people on the budget, you really need to hammer. And the problem is you only got 25 or 30% of the people in the state government are working on the budget, yet the only thing required by the budget is, or by the state constitution, is a budget. So you got 75% of the people that are not even doing the work that the state constitution requires. They're thinking up new taxes.
Now, just so we're clear.
Rules and regulations.
Hold on, just so we're clear. Dave Ageba on the line with me here, former state rep for a couple of terms. The governor has five planes, but it wasn't just this governor. He didn't go out and buy five planes. That's been there for a long time. So the point that it's a systemic, long-term problem we have, and it's not just Michigan. It's the country. It's municipalities. It's townships. It's government all over the place spending money. Am I right or wrong?
Well, of course it is. Nothing but a big sucking sound. The problem is government has one propensity. That's to increase in size and expenditure, and it does it well. We have to demand that the people you put in Lansing or Congress have a finger on spending and stop it. Even if you just froze it for a couple of years, we come out way ahead on our budgets, but they don't do it. They just can't seem to control their spending. Yet, they demand that you and I control our spending, and we have to pay our taxes while they're demanding more, a greater percentage of your wages. It's got to stop. The only way it's going to stop is put different people in office.
All right. Well, Dave, I greatly, I know you were probably just getting up and around, but you shot me a message there on Facebook, and I couldn't look the other way. But, all right, let me ask you one last thing about this Gordie Howe Bridge. I mean, why are we spending money to compete against a bridge that's already there? Why are we spending money, $370 million, which is the original budget? These things tend to, in my experience, go over budget and take a lot more time to build than they ever predict. They never come in on time and under budget, generally speaking. Why do we need this bridge?
Well, for example, the owner of the bridge now that goes to Canada, we gave him the right to build that. We told him he could do that. We spent $250 million on the Gateway Project, fixed all our roads going up the bridge, and then suddenly when Granholm got in and when Snyder got in, they said, no, we're going to build another bridge. When I chaired transportation, I said, you're going to stop spending any money trying to build that other bridge. We have an entrepreneur that wants to build that bridge. It's only at 40% of capacity. He wants to build another six-lane bridge to Canada. Let him do it. It won't cost us anything. I'll guarantee you if they build another bridge a mile and a half south, at government expense, it will never pay for itself. Look at the Mackinac Bridge right now. That was supposed to pay for itself in 10 years. It is not. It does not. We subsidize that every year since that was built because it doesn't pay for itself. The same thing will happen if we build another one south of Matty Maroon's bridge. So my statement's always been, let Matty spend his other bridge. He's all set to go. When he twin spans it, you'll have six new lanes, and then he can go ahead and, if he wants to, fix up that old one. Problem was they won't let him tear it down because it has historical perspective to it. So he's kind of stuck. So an entrepreneur always does a better job and a cheaper rate than what the government does. And you're exactly correct. It will cost us more. It will never pay for itself. It's common sense, but the governor doesn't get it.
Well, that's right. Capital in the private sector always does better than capital in the public sector. No question about it. Dave Ageman, greatly appreciate you taking the call this morning. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
And real quickly, we're going to check in. What do you got there? Yeah, Matt, one more. Jennifer, excuse me. Jennifer's there. I'm looking at the wrong screen. Jennifer, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well.
I'm glad you're back.
Thank you.
You know, once the taxpayers reject something in an election, they should not be allowed to ram it through. And once they reject it, they can't keep proposing it and putting it before them three and four times until they ram it through. Just like this gasoline tax. And then you have idiots up there said that they've taken a survey and people here just want to pay more taxes. Are you nuts? We're struggling as it is.
You know.
I can't go next door and tell my neighbor, hey, I need a vacation. I haven't had one in 30 years. I'm going to raise your taxes so I can have fun.
Yeah, I that's what you should do. Just go over and take their money. It's yours anyway.
Oh, I'd like to have a vacation like Obama took. Yeah. $85 million.
There you go. Jennifer, glad to have you back as well. 14 after on a Thursday. You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
I got a question for you, and it's not going to sit very well to some. Why is it my responsibility to pay for your decisions? And I'm serious. Why is it my responsibility to pay for your decisions or anybody else's decisions for that matter? My next guest is here to talk about a bipartisan plan for child care. Angela Rashidi here is a research fellow in poverty studies at the American Enterprise Institute. And Angela, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Now we know Donald Trump, led by Ivanka, his daughter, came out and talked about a new program for child care. But we're $25 trillion after the beginning of the Great Society, if you will, of Lyndon Baines Johnson that began in the 1960s. We haven't moved poverty but about 1 point, and the only real difference is that the poor people, instead of being over 65 or under 18, that's been the big change in who's in poverty in America. It went from being old people to being children. But we haven't changed poverty numbers in this country, having spent $25 trillion. Why would we want to continue to send good money after bad in pursuit of government programs that don't work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And actually, when you look at the official poverty measure, you're right. It hasn't moved a whole lot. But there is an alternative measure of poverty that when you factor in all of that government spending, mm-hmm. we actually have reduced poverty, and especially for children, quite dramatically. The problem with that is that it's mostly been in the form of transfer payments, so like cash assistance that, you know, relieves material hardship, but it doesn't do a whole lot to help people work so that they can help themselves. So one of the reasons I'm a supporter of child care assistance is because it is one of the safety net programs that we have that actually supports people in work. Rather than just transferring money to them. It's intended to really get people on the right path so that they can help themselves and they can become self-sufficient without government assistance.
Yeah, but that brings me back to my question of, you know, say I'm a person that has no children. Why is it my responsibility to pay for those that do?
Well, I mean, I think you could ask that question about anything. You know, taxpayers pay for public education, for example, and in the society that we live in, that is viewed as acceptable. And there's a lot of reasons. You know, having children does contribute to our society and contribute to our economy. And so even childless individuals do get something out of that in the long run. But I think the question really is how much, you know, how much should be transferred from childless individuals, for example, to people with children.
Well, you're talking about, the earned income tax credit, for example, for people with children, right? I mean, that's a negative income tax. In effect, it's a welfare payment to a lot of folks who get far more back than they ever pay into the system as a result of having children in the first place. So that's already going on. And now the suggestion is now we should further subsidize with this. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just trying to you to explain to me why it's right.
Yeah, and I challenge you a little bit on that people don't pay into the system. So most people that get the earned income tax credit only get it for a year or two. People turn over, only about a third of people turn over every year. And the thing, you know, about the earned income tax credit is directly linked to work. It only goes to people who work. So for a lot of people, it kind of bridges that gap for maybe a bad year with low earnings. And in the long run, though, because they're still connected to the labor market, they likely are contributing a great deal. And in the future, they likely are contributing more taxes than they are taking out of the system. And that certainly is not true for everybody. But, you know, I think to categorize the EITC and even child care assistance as a welfare program, I think is a little, you know, it's not quite right because, again, it's...
But if the government is paying people for whatever assistance, whether it's job assistance or child care assistance, what other term would you use besides welfare? Do you have a better term? If you want to talk semantics, that's fine. We can call it something else, but government payments are government payments.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it a work support. And I mean, even middle income and even high income people get government support.
Well, I don't disagree with that. And you have certainly businesses that get all sorts of payments. I don't agree with that either. I think that the money is best served in private hands more often than it is in government hands. However, this is a program that brings together Republicans and Democrats, does the child care deal. So I'm quite convinced it's probably going to happen in some fashion. And it was something put together by Donald Trump. And this might be one of the places that the Democrats actually have to, I don't know, have their hat in their hand and walk in and be polite to him because it's something they agree with as well.
Possibly. We'll have to see how it plays out. I think the Democrats would prefer a larger program than even what Trump is proposing. So we'll see if they go along with what they're proposing or if they demand something more.
I find that shocking that the Democrats want a bigger plan. But the point is, it is something that brings together Democrats and Republicans, progressives, and some conservatives. And I'm right about that. It brings people to the same place because they have the same belief that it can help American families, correct?
It has in the past, yes. Republican presidents actually have started the child care programs that we do have.
So maybe what we need then is more conscientious. If we're going to have a safety net, which we are, and I was playing devil's advocate there to make the point that we're going to have these safety nets, but maybe we have to take a look at these safety nets so that they're not everything for everybody all the time, but they're more, because the problem with government programs, Angela, to me, is they don't get thought out very well into the future. Then they become bloated and more money goes in. They become inefficient and the money is squandered too often. And not put to the people that actually would need the daycare might not get as much as they need because it's lost in inefficiency.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't disagree with you. And you know, that's why, I mean, I do argue for programs that support work. And we also, as you said, we have to make sure that they're efficient and they're effective and they're going to the right people. And I think, you know, we should reprioritize so that our government, the government money that we are spending goes to the right people and for the right things. And I think childcare that helps people work is one of the right things.
And you've done a fine job of establishing that, and I appreciate that because I think most people agree with you. And I think most people, prioritizing, I think, is maybe where people get, I think people just get fatigued because it's this program, that program, this program. And there's ones that are maybe more important, like childcare, that might be more important than other programs if they're prioritized properly. Angela, great points you've made. Thank you for stopping in.
Thank you.
Angela Rashidi from the American Enterprise Institute here on the program. You're going to be stuck with some of them, those that you don't like, any of them. Prioritize, my friends. Back in a moment.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Broken glass everywhere.
People. All right, here it is. We're going to get some things straight because I have to clarify a couple of things that I keep seeing and hearing that just are inaccurate. And I want to get to this. First of all, I'm sick and tired of people calling it Donald Trump's border wall. Well, Trump's the wall was voted on and passed in 2006. It was supported by Senators Obama, Clinton, Schumer, and others. Supported the border wall in 2006 and then failed to fund it in 2007, did the Congress. This is not Donald Trump's border wall. This was put in place years ago. More recently, we had Steve Forbes on the program here, and he talked to us about a border adjustment tax that is strongly opposed by the president, but supported by the likes of Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. And now I'm looking at all these headlines that say, you know, Donald Trump's border adjustment tax and how people are against it, like Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is a feckless weasel that'll be against anything that Donald Trump supports or get in front of any camera that's possible to so he can talk down Donald Trump. But I wanted to get Kyle Walters here, a financial and tax strategist, founder of the Atlas Tax Advisors in Dallas-Fort Worth, to talk about this tax, what it means, who really supports it, and how it can impact you. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
And let's be clear, unless Steve Forbes is out to lunch on this one, I don't think he is, Donald Trump doesn't agree with the border adjustment tax, which would be about a 20% tax on everything that crosses the border of about, you know, whether it's buttons or zippers or phones or pens or cars or whatever it may be, 20%. And that's not what Donald Trump's approach to taxes at the border is. But could you explain this border adjustment tax from your perspective?
Yeah, Steve. So the big thing about the border adjustment tax and the big reason that Trump doesn't like it is he just says, hey, it's too complicated, right? It's, you know, you're talking about consumption versus where is it consumed versus where is it produced. It creates all sort of crossing issues. So what Trump's looking to do is saying, hey, how do we put together a tax plan that helps the average taxpayer and also makes the tax code a little bit simpler? And in his opinion, the current, you know, whatever this border tax is that they're talking about doing, it's just not doing that. There's too many ins and outs, and the I guess, results would not be clear to him.
And for folks that live in places like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Indiana, where there is a legitimate effort underway to jumpstart the manufacturing economy and maybe not get all the jobs back that were lost over the last 15 or 20 years, but head back in that direction at least. And this border adjustment tax, I don't think, does anything to help that.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. Or at least it doesn't, you know, the design of it doesn't seem like that's what it's structured to do. You know, really what we're looking at is coming down the pipe is, you know, Ryan and the GOP's tax plan, overarching tax plan versus Trump's tax plan, which is overarching. And the good news is both of those tax reform plans involve across the board, typically lower taxes for the American taxpayer. So that's the good news. Now, they go about it different ways. And there's things, there's these smaller pieces like the border tax, which is a component of, you know, component of Ryan's plan that starts throwing a couple of wrenches in this. But that's the interesting thing is either of these plans involve a tax reform that has a lower tax rate for the normal taxpayer.
As you look at them, Donald Trump's talking about lowering the corporate tax rate as low as 15%. I don't think most people think that's possible, but maybe 20% is. He's also talking about lowering the tax rate for individual Americans in most regards, in many brackets, eliminating the number of, reducing the number of brackets, I should say, from 7 to 3 or 4. All of these things would simplify. I don't know, I suppose, as many details about Paul Ryan's plan or anybody else's plan, except that I'm suspect of Ryan and the Republicans when they start talking about this border adjustment tax that all businesses that I have seen weigh in on this say it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing becomes is people really understanding how does it affect them. So, like you're talking about, if you're in Michigan and you're seeing effectively a surcharge start coming in, how does that impact our manufacturing? How does it impact bringing in new jobs? It just sounds like more punitive than anything, right? So when all this flushes out, what's the strategy to actually grow the economy off this? That's still unclear.
Yeah, that's my point. I think you're exactly right. It sounds like a punitive tax, and every button, bottle, you know, everything you can think of that comes across the border. Donald Trump's approach to taxes across the border were more in line with, I suppose, the words punishment for companies that would flee America to set up shop in foreign countries in an effort to pay less in taxes and equalize that so they would be more inclined, even if by some sort of government threat, I suppose, to keep their factories, their operations, and more importantly, their jobs here in the U.S. Two very different approaches, but I don't see what, again, I'm lost as to how a border adjustment tax helps create jobs in America at all.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are.
I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, just like Trump's talking about, the biggest thing is how do you create a more simplified tax code that helps more taxpayers and brings more jobs to the United States, which is what he's trying to do.
Well, it's pretty simple. You lower regulation, you keep more capital, and I don't just mean money, but I mean capital in the hands of private people, private enterprise, private businesses, because it's used more efficiently in the private sector than it is ever used in the government or public sector. We know that. Well, and if you don't know that, you should. So, all right, so talking about Donald Trump's overall tax plan, he says maybe mid-March we'll see something come out. What do you expect? Have you heard anything leaking out that gets your attention? You say, that's a good idea. I like this. I don't like that. Some things on either side of the ledger.
Yeah, you know, so as far as mid-March, I think that's a pretty aggressive time frame. It could happen, and a lot of these targets are potentials and best-case scenarios. You know, I've heard everything from it may not even get past this year. So now that being said, okay, what does it mean either way? So really what you're looking at is you have the Trump tax plan and the GOP tax plan that are both, there's probably going to be some components of each meeting in the middle there. Both of those, again, involve lower taxes for the individual.
I will tell you this. If it doesn't get passed this year, we're with Kyle Walters, by the way, a tax strategist from Dallas-Fort Worth. If it doesn't get passed this year, Kyle, the people running for election next year are going to be in trouble. If we don't have a tax plan on the table because the Republicans didn't get it done, the continued cleansing of Washington will begin anew in November of 2018. People are not interested in waiting anymore. They're not interested in waiting for more promises. One of the reasons Donald Trump got elected was to lower regulation, lower taxes. If the Republicans obstruct that effort, I think the Republicans and the Democrats could both pay a price at the ballot box.
Yeah, I agree. I think voters could end up being upset with people just disagreeing in order to posture and just disagree rather than just get something done. Especially when it's all said and done, they're not terribly far off, right? So you would ask, hey, what are the biggest changes? Well, like you'd mentioned, I mean, a more simplified tax code, higher standard deductions. You're going to be having lower taxes almost across the board. Corporate taxes are going to be going down. So the idea being that this is going to be spurring a lot of growth. Just from the standpoint of people are going to have more money in their pockets to grow the economy.
And that's what it takes, more money in the pockets. And the biggest thing that I see is if we can repatriate the offshore profits that have been estimated as high as $3 trillion out there that are sitting overseas because they can't come back to America because the tax burden on them is too high. If Donald Trump can lower that and get a couple $1 trillion to come home to roost or three, good Lord, that'll be a kick in the economy in a good way for sure. Kyle, I'll give you the last word for 15 seconds.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, Steve, the U.S. Has got a notoriously high corporate tax bracket. If we lower that and start spurring economic growth along with putting more money in the taxpayers' pockets, hopefully that puts us all in a better position.
Kyle, good conversation. Kyle Walters, greatly appreciated, sir.
Thanks, Steve.
Financial tax advisor and strategist from Dallas, Fort Worth. He's up early. Why? Because it's the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
After the hour. I admit I was almost up to three, but I didn't quite make it. But I do have two. I've got two of the movies on the top ten this week that I've actually seen. I'm so proud of myself. I can talk intelligently about the conversation I'm about to have with Ron Van Timmeren from Celebration Cinemas. Ron?
Hey, well, since you're so smart, maybe you can help me with my Oscar ballot. I'm having trouble with a foreign language film. Do you think it'll be The Salesman or A Man Called Uwe?
Yeah. Wait. I've got it right here in front of me. Where did it go? Foreign film. Gosh darn it. That's right. Foreign language. A Land of Mine, A Man Called... It's going to be Tana. Tana's going to be the winner.
No way. Maybe Tony Erdman sneaks in, but not Tana.
Of course, naturally, I have no knowledge of any of these films. Never heard of any one of them, but there it is, you know.
Yeah. Actually, we're playing one of them over at the Studio C in Okemos and a couple of other locations in our indie film series, but I haven't seen any of the foreign language films, and I'm filling out mostly guesses. Or La La Land. Defaulting to La La Land works pretty well for your Oscar ballot this weekend.
All right, so you got me looking at this ballot for a moment here. A couple of these movies that I see for Best Actor in a Leading Role, Viggo Mortensen, is that how I'd say it?
Yep.
Captain Fantastic, never heard of it.
Cool movie. I actually never saw it in the theater, but I did do a pay-per-view at home. Really interesting story about a man who's raising his family off the grid, essentially, and then ends up back on the grid, and it doesn't work so well.
Yeah, and then I see Meryl Streep and Florence Foster Jenkins. Never heard of it.
That's the one where she plays the opera singer who can't sing. It's a very funny movie.
Well, Meryl, okay, yeah, so some of the movies I haven't heard of, but a lot of them, clearly I have. And like I said, I made it out to the movies over the last few days and loved the movie I saw. We'll go see it again because I missed so much the first time because I was laughing too hard.
No way. Fist Fight?
Lego.
Of course.
Yeah. Dude, that movie is brilliant. Brilliant.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. I mean, I was laughing so hard for the first... It slows down it for a bit, but the first half hour of the movie... I was laughing out loud over and repeatedly. I'm like, this is silly, and it's funny, and it's good, and
right,
really good.
Right. You feel like you drank about a dozen Red Bulls after that first half hour.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, the pace is just incredible. Bam, bam, bam. But it was fun.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. And if you're into the DC comic world, you can catch all kinds of characters and celebrity voices. I went back and looked at the credits, and I went, wait a minute, Jonah Hill does a voice in this movie? How did I miss that?
Exactly. No, it was really good. Took the kids to it, of course. It's like a lot of good movies at that level. A lot of the humor go over the kids' head, which is good. Because if your kids are getting that humor, maybe you ought to check out what's going on in your own home. But I mean, but the point being is good humor for the adults, good humor for the kids, clean play, good stuff. And I am going to see it again just so I can catch everything that I missed.
Good point, Steve. You're right. There is so much going on in that movie and so works on so many levels. You know, the audience I sat with, there were more adults than children in it. So you don't have to take your kids or need to be a child to enjoy the Lego Batman movie.
And it's number one.
Yep, it's number one, although I think this weekend, Get Out is going to be the surprise thriller this weekend. Have you seen any ads for that, Steve?
I have not, so fill me in.
Okay, it's actually getting 100% on RottenTomatoes.com, mostly because the critics love it as social satire, taking on racism in our society, because it's the story of a white girlfriend with a black boyfriend meeting the parents, and once she brings him home, something weird happens in this community to the black folks, if you know what I mean, and it gets, I don't know, is it zombies, is it Stepford Wives, I can't quite figure out what's going on here, but director and writer Jordan Peele from Key & Peele is getting great reviews for Get Out, and it's a horror film, they say, with comedy.
100% fresh. I didn't think that was possible, but all right, there it is.
Yeah, Get Out looks like it'll be a surprise. 25, 27 million is what they're tracking for it right now. And then there's a couple also-rans this weekend. Steve, Rock Dog, which is another PG animated movie about singing animals, not to be confused with the movie Sing, but they're going for that same audience. J.K. Simmons, Luke Wilson, Eddie Izzard, Louis Black doing some of the voices. And then Collide with an interesting cast. Anthony Hopkins and Ben Kingsley lead the cast. Felicity Jones in it as well. Nicholas Holt. Looks like your basic, you know, drug deal gone bad kind of action thriller movie. And that'll be an also-ran this weekend as well. PG-13 on that one.
Well, yeah. That movie needs to be R-rated to get where it needs to be, doesn't it? I mean, I'm no expert here, but if Anthony Hopkins is, you know, doing drugs and backpackers and running across Europe at high rates of speed, it should be an R movie.
I know. I thought the same thing. It should be a John Wick caliber title, but you know, they think PG-13 opens it up to a younger male audience, and maybe they're right. I just don't think this thing does even 10 million this weekend, so it probably doesn't matter what the rating is.
Well, there you go. And anything else we need to know about here on the list?
Well, Metropolitan Opera live from the Met. That's happening on Saturday all over the celebration circuit and all over America. Flicks Family Film Festival, we're kicking that 8-week program off. Many of our locations showing the movie Storks, free for kids 12 and under, $5 for everybody else, and a couple other alternative programs going on this weekend. Check them out at CelebrationCinema.com, where you can buy your tickets in advance as well.
All right, and in the Oscars, you can go fill that out. I have no chance of winning anything, but I'm going to say there's going to be an upset. Hacksaw Ridge wins. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. It will never happen. But I am.
No, but if you're betting against La La Land, Hidden Figures is the one to bet on. Thinking Denzel Washington, Best Actor. We've got Emma Stone, Best Actress. Michelle Ali for Moonlight, Best Supporting Actor. And Viola Davis for Best Supporting Actress. Take those to the bank.
Yeah, I saw part of Hidden Figures because I followed my wife and children in to see the Lego movie. My daughter's sitting there going, this is an awfully long preview. What theater are we in? We made it in time for the Lego movie. Yeah, I'm like, honey, I think we're in the wrong place. Anyhow, Ron, where will I find you?
See the movie, Steve.
There it is, Ron Van Tiemann. We sat there, and my daughter's going, this is an awfully long preview. Yeah, we're in the wrong theater. Ah, these things happen. 52 after.